that you're born an Italian. If you want your life to be great, see that you're born an Italiano and your life will be great.
Hey there, Paisani. Welcome back to another episode of the Italian-American Podcast. I'm John Viola, along with my partner in crime, the notorious P.O.B., Patrick O'Boyle, the Italian-American Wikipedia himself. And we have an episode that I think both of us are very much looking forward to today, because not only do we get to discuss a topic that takes us to a different part of Italian-America, which we always love, and I know our audience is always hungry for, but we also get to catch up with an old friend and colleague who I got to know pretty well during my time at the National Italian American Foundation and through the likes of some of our board members and board chair who lived in the city of brotherly love, where he was the former consul general. So we're going to introduce Ambassador Canapari in just a minute. But first and foremost, Pat, how happy are you to talk about a city that I know we both enjoy very much?
How happy am I to talk about Philadelphia?
Yeah, because you always want to get us out of the New York, New Jersey. You like the topics that take us out.
Yeah, I mean, sure. I mean, I didn't see that question coming. That's why I'm trying to get my head. No, I like everywhere. Philadelphia is nice. New York is nice. Boston's nice.
You always tell me that it's important to you that we, you know, we represent the Italian American experience outside of where we are. Sometimes it's easy, you know.
As I get older and more aware that New York and its surrounding provinces, North Jersey, Southern Connecticut, has a worldview that we are the center of the world.
Yeah.
But I think that we unnecessarily disregard, through the arrogance that comes with caput mundi status, the other parts of the United States.
Yeah.
So in that sense, I agree. And I think there's a lot of stuff that people in New York miss out on because they don't get out there. So if you want to put it that way, you know, one of my big Philly, because we have so many Philly listeners, someone could help with this. Gabe from the NIAF board.
Yeah, bon anima, Gabe Batista, the former chair.
Yes, Gabe always spoke of buying raviolis in Philly, and they had sugar and I think cinnamon in them. I know they had sugar.
Wow, that's a medieval recipe.
It was an Abruzzese thing. And it makes sense because Abruzzo Molise is definitely the dominant culture, the dominant region of Italy that settled Philadelphia. So that would make sense. The same way it's kind of they're the dominant people who settled Cleveland. And they're nice, peaceful people. They don't make noise.
I mean, I married one, so I'm a big advocate for the Abruzzese and Molisani. And I find that we spent a lot of time down there as individuals, you and I. I don't think we've ever actually gone down together, maybe once for a dinner. But the Italian community in Philadelphia is obviously a significant one, as Philly is a significant city on its own.
See, now you put a nickel in me, I'm going to start going off. Now, I'm here thinking to myself, like, in a gastronomic sense, right, though the people in Italy are just horrified by it, but if you look at it in an anthropological sense, Philly kind of co-opted the cheesesteak as Italian-Americanized it.
Yeah.
Like Elizabeth, New Jersey did with the hot dog. All the players in the cheesesteak world in Philly are all Italian-Americans.
But it's not an Italian-American culinary.
No, but we appropriate, what's the word?
Yeah, operators. Yeah.
No.
Appropriated it.
Appropriated, that's it.
Yeah.
We appropriated the hot dog in Elizabeth and Union and trickled into Newark and made the Italian hot dog. Stuff like that fascinates me.
Me too. Things that are Italian-American contributions through successful marketing, successful, you know, expansion of something or exploitation of something, like, you know, like the buffalo wings, right? Buffalo wings are not an Italian-American food, but they were first whipped up by an Italian-American mom who just wanted to feed her hungry family in Buffalo, New York. And so, you know.
And I think that's fantastic. The beauty of Italy is you can give Italy anything and they make it better.
I couldn't agree with you more. And there's actually...
And we made a better hot dog. We made a better,
and a better cheesesteak. Yeah. I could not agree with you more. Yeah, that is very true. Italians can make... I mean, look what we did for the Greeks. We made everything they touched better.
Everything. We're very good. We're very creative.
That's very true.
Like certain countries are just a copiers. They'll copy it better. Italy's creative, so Italy can get it and just get it better than where it was.
Well, the gentleman who we're going to speak to today, I've been looking forward to introducing since we made this arrangement because, first of all, like I said, I did get to know him during my time in Washington and doing some work in Philadelphia. He's the former consul general in Philadelphia for many years. He's also the former ambassador from Italy to the Dominican Republic. Now he's back in Rome, currently serving as the Director General for Country Promotion, of the Italian Ministry of Foreign Affairs. So basically, his office is responsible for the internationalization of local governments, tourism, sport, Italian chambers of commerce abroad, expos, promotions of Italian design, food and beverage. So what better person to not only come on and talk about Italian influence in Philadelphia, but talk about his love of the city from spending so many years there. And he is also co-editor of The Italian Legacy in Philadelphia, History, Culture, People, and Ideas from Temple University Press in 2021. So it makes me very, very proud to introduce not just a fantastic Italian champion and diplomat, but a very, very good friend, Ambassador Andrea Canepari. Ambassador, welcome to the Italian American Podcast.
Thank you so much, John. Wonderful seeing you again.
It is wonderful to see you, Ambassador. We are very, very happy for the excuse. I'm sorry that it's remote through Zoom. You're obviously still in Rome. You're not traveling at this point, right?
No. Well, actually, I've been to New York and Philadelphia 2 months ago just to promote the Italian Legacy in Philadelphia book and another book, The Italian Legacy in Dominican Republic.
Wow. You have a book on the Italians in the Dominican Republic?
Yes, and I have a third one about the Italian legacy in Washington, D.C.
Oh, we got a whole series on this is fantastic. I had no idea there were Italians in the Dominican. See, John's going to yell at me because he wants to talk about Philly, but I got to ask my question. So there are Italians in the Dominican Republic? I knew they were in Cuba.
No, actually, a big part of the culture, economy, art, architecture, cuisine, of course, everything of the Dominican Republic is coming from Italian influence, Italian legacy, Italian population that came. Well, the first one that came to the Dominican Republic was Christopher Columbus, so an Italian. And then in the 19th century, a lot of merchants from Genoa, actually the same region of settlers that also went to the first capital of the U.S., Philadelphia, to create economic trading from Italy to the U.S. I mean, the same merchants came also to Dominican Republic. They invested. They created the social infrastructure of the country. So the first newspaper 150 years ago, the first everything, the first cathedral, everything had an Italian imprint, still there is a big love for Italy and the Italians, Dominican influenced and influence nowadays as well, all aspects of life in that country. So it's big influence.
Can we go on the road show there, John?
Oh, I would love that.
We have greetings from Italian America. I would do greetings from the DR. Italian Dominican Republic. That would be a fun episode. I love the DR. Ambassador, we should have had you on a long time ago. We would have been in the DR by now.
That's absolutely right.
We could have hit a whole Caribbean. John has wanted to have you on, but we wanted to have you on the right moment.
Now we know. I mean, it's funny. I have a buddy of mine from Fordham University that I was very close to in school and have kept in pretty decent touch with, and he actually has listened to the show a couple of times, really out of friendship, and he's told me how much he finds it interesting to see the similarities between our Italian American experience and the Dominican American experience. And he was telling me, because he's got most of his family still there, about a couple of towns that not only have deep Italian roots from their earliest foundations, but are also really, really desirable destinations for Italian expats moving to the Dominican Republic or, you know, spending a portion of their year there in the wintertime and this and that. And I found it so fascinating because in the Spanish-speaking world, you tend to think of Argentina and, you know, places like Uruguay, but you overlook the Spanish Caribbean as places that saw a lot of settlement.
The two Sicilies, when Columbus came to the New World, everything south of Rome belonged to the same empire.
That's right.
We were one big happy family.
For a long time.
That's why there's such connections between, even linguistically, with the Dominican Republic and the south of Italy. Oh, Ambassador, I wish we could. I have to go out later today, but I'd be here all afternoon. We could get 6 episodes out of this.
Let's do it.
The DR and wow. But John's going to yell at me because I'm not talking about Philly. I'm going to be in the doghouse.
No, I mean, as much as I love the city of brotherly love, I am super fascinated by discovering the Italian experience in places that, you know, we don't necessarily think of, like Chile or Peru and, you know, South Africa, places that have not necessarily been celebrated for it like we have, or Canada or Australia and things like that, or Argentina and Brazil. So, yeah, I'm all about digging deep into that. And I have to say, I was reading in my show notes some of the reviews of the Philadelphia book, and one of them mentions towards the end of the review that the reviewer really found an even-handedness in the work that you and your editing partner edited here about Philadelphia, and celebrates the series, what you've already done around the Dominican Republic and Washington, D.C. And it is great to have a series that's not only a geographic kind of, you know, chest-thumping view of what we have to be proud of in terms of our contributions to America and different places, but also to look at from the earliest settlement here in the colonial period, the Italian influence on thinkers, on architecture, on culture, on life. And so the series has been very, very well reviewed. Before we jump into Philadelphia, do you have another one brewing? Is there another place that you're looking to turn your attention for the series?
No, not yet, but I will have next year the Italian edition of the Italian Legacy in Philadelphia book. And I'm very happy because the most prestigious, important, maybe Italian publishing company, which is also a cultural institute, Treccani. Treccani, more than 100 years ago, started the Italian Encyclopedia. It's very prestigious and serious publishing institution, decided to print the Italian edition.
You know, we have a listener, Eric Lucero, who just wrote a book about the people from Bicari outside of Foggia, who settled in Philadelphia. He did a magnum opus. It's in Italian and English. He did it together with his cousins. They mapped out the migration patterns from Vicari to Philadelphia. So I'm offline. We definitely need to get you guys together. But this seems to be the year of Philadelphia and Italian-American books.
Philadelphia is a very Italian city. If you think that you have a center city, which is a translation of an Italian expression, centro città, it's very different than an American downtown, because in a center city, in a centro città, you live, you shop, you work. It's a very European and Italian concept, way of living, very different from any other experience in the US. In Philadelphia, you have a great Italian-American community, very diversified, and sometimes, even if they do love Italy, they are not so aware of all the connections with Italy, with Italian-American, with Italian culture that they have. So that's how all this project started, because there is a lot of richness and the need to remember those stories, these examples, these influences, in order to appreciate more the city of Philadelphia, but also to appreciate more what Italians and Italian-American did. And that's important. So all these studies, I think, are important in that perspective.
Do you think that's the case because Philadelphia is like the oldest American city? Like Philadelphia and Boston were much more important cities early on in American history than New York was. Do you feel the antiquity and the connection with Europe in that sense? Like you mentioned the center city, but are there other aspects of Italianness that you find in Philadelphia that you didn't see, for instance, in maybe New York or in Chicago or in Boston?
I think that the Italian experience in Philadelphia is perceived everywhere, from the architectural structure of the city, the Italian neighborhood, the big amount of Italian-American population that settled there, how they interacted with the earlier settlers of Pennsylvania, and that created a very interesting mixtures. So it was a magic experience. Of course, there are great Italian-American communities in other parts of the East Coast, as you mentioned, but since Philadelphia was also the first capital, Philadelphia attracted a lot of love for arts, for culture, for creating very nice and well-built buildings. So the Italian experience was able to permeate all these aspects. And you see Italian craftsmanship in buildings, paintings, in music, in the theaters. Italy is everywhere. The opera house of Philadelphia is kind of a copy, an inspiration of the famous Milanese theater La Scala. Being the first capital helped to attract all these energies, this idea, and they are still there.
You know, it's funny because when I was at NIAF, we worked on a project with the White House Historical Association of the Italian influence in Washington and in the White House, I should say. But with so much of what we were talking about, the White House is synonymous with the presidency, but the building didn't come obviously until later. And as you say, the first capital was in Philadelphia. And I think that Philly, because of the Declaration of Independence, the Liberty Bell, all of the founding mythology, is the sort of, you know, center of the American Revolution, although Boston would probably claim it too. But my point being, one of the most important influences I think that Italy has had here in the United States before there was an Italy and before there was the United States is the philosophical, right? We talk a lot about Jefferson and Mazzei, and we talk about Benjamin Franklin and Filangieri and all of the philosophy that went into the founding of a very unique experiment at the time, this republic here in the United States. Can you talk a little bit about the idea of Italy as part of the legacy of the concept of liberty and self-government?
That's a very important and interesting point, John, because sometimes when we think about Italian-American, we think about just an influence for a definite period of time, the mass migration. But there was other Italians before, even in the colonial period. And not only they came, but with them that they brought books and ideas. And some of the key points of the U.S.-American Declaration of Independence, I mean, a milestone in world history, are actually, as you were mentioning, coming from Italian philosophers and thinkers. And sometimes they are overlooked because we think about some other contribution, but this contribution are very part and they are the essence of the American way of life as we think as it is, but sometimes we don't see it. There are also other parts, a new immigration coming now to the US, and sometimes they also feel that they are not part of the same wave of migrations and ideas that came before. And it's a pity, because in my experience as consul general, as diplomat, I always saw kind of same characteristics, very hardworking people, serious, that came, that raised the bar of the place where they went, through hard work, through bringing ideas. And everybody in a different way contributed to the country where they now decided to belong. So from the ideas at the beginnings to top heart, everything is linked. And what that was very clear to me in Philadelphia. I was happy when the deputy director of one of the top Italian newspaper, Corriere della Sera, came to Philadelphia to see, witness one of the initiative that I promoted, an Italian cultural month. And he was a little bit skeptical. He knew a lot the US, it was posted in Washington, New York, so he knew very well. Then he came to Philadelphia, and the title, he wrote a 2-page article, so big stuff. And the title was From Rocky to Botticelli, Italian Philadelphia. And I love the title, because the Botticelli, I mean, very noble, sophisticated Renaissance painter at the Philadelphia Museum of Art, together with Rocky Balboa. And actually, they are together, because if you're familiar with the movie and the city, I mean, there is a statue of Rocky at the footsteps of the Philadelphia Museum of Art. So they are linked, and they brought a contribution which is really at the core of the identity of the city. And sometimes it's overlooked, but it's Italian, it's Italian-American, and they are together. So sometimes we are overlooking the contribution of these books, of Filangieri, of Mazzei, of this Italian that came to the US near the founding fathers, and they were part of some of the crucial points of the world and US history. And sometimes we don't recognize it.
No, often we don't. I think it gets overlooked a lot. And I think history is told in oversimplified ways. And so, you know, I don't think people recognize that it was almost 100 years later, right? 80 some odd years later, after the American Revolution, that Italy went through its own unification in 1860-61, mm-hmm. And eventually, and you know, still through 66 with Venice and 1871 with Rome. But I don't think people realize that there have been diplomatic ties and influences long before. One of the things we do with the Constantinian Order that I think is really interesting is we've been doing research into the diplomatic relations between the former Kingdom of the Two Sicilies and the United States, including which cities had consulates. And do you know offhand, having served as the consul general in Philadelphia, which of the pre-unitary states or which might have been the oldest to have had diplomatic or consular representation in Philly?
No, that's another amazing story. Actually, my first chapter on the Philadelphia book, it's the history of the Italian consulate and the consular presence. So I was fascinating to discover that one of the first was Genoa, Count Joseph Ravara, and he was working in one of the top commercial firm in Philadelphia, which was the most important trading company in the world, one of the most important trading company at the time. And so Genoa, because, I mean, as Columbus, I mean, it's clear why Genoa, but also the Papal States and Kingdom of Sardinia, and a lot of, the first was Genoa, but some others came. And another fascinating story is that, and it's also in the book, it's a chapter written by Salman Gioni of Jefferson University. And there is a small chapter about the fascinating story of the brother of Garibaldi. And he was consul in Philadelphia, and he died there. And and also the death of that brother influenced Garibaldi to take the choices, the hierarchic choices that he decided, and then to take. So even in one big part of Italian history, and actually world history, Garibaldi, there is a Philadelphia connection and a consular connection. So I'm very happy that you're funding these researches, because they're extremely interesting, and a lot of interesting stuff might come up.
It brings us to the way you and your team framed the book is to split it into four parts to give kind of a broad, I don't want to say chapters, because the chapters is not the chapters, broad outline.
Sections, yeah.
Yeah, sections, mm-hmm. Phases of the Italian legacy in Philadelphia, the first being independence in the early republic, then new institutions of knowledge, arts, culture, then made in America around immigration and community formation, and finally, the contemporary experience in Philadelphia. So let's talk a little bit about the idea of that second phase, of the sort of evolution around what it meant to be cultured, because I think we have this understanding that for European families of influence, of wealth or notoriety, or merchant families, or families who saw themselves as social climbers, the idea was that what we now do in university and high school, they did in the Grand Tour. And obviously Italy was at the heart of it, and so much of Italy was at the heart of it. But in the book, it speaks about the idea that the early Americans in places like Philadelphia also engaged in the Grand Tour. How represented were early Philadelphians in those travels, and what did they bring back?
It's a great question. Philadelphians were fascinated by by culture, because how Philadelphia was framed by the first settler, by William Penn. So there is a great attention to that dimension. And through great scholars, we discovered how many trips they made and how many correspondences that they had with Italian Italian colleagues in the art world. And the Italian model was actually the model that they used also to teach art in the new academies of the new capital of the US, so the Pennsylvania Academy of Fine Arts, one of the top cultural institutions now and at the time, bought a lot of Italian paintings in order, and also Italian statues, in order to teach to their students that model of art. So there was a decision to take the Italian art as a way to teach to the students, so to influence was a big way of influence people how to like and perceive arts. And big institutions such as the Philadelphia, the Pennsylvania University Museum of Art, it was inspired by Italian models. So at that time, there was a choice, and they made a choice to look at that Italian model. So it's fascinating how you can still see it while you walk in the streets of Philadelphia.
Yeah, I've recently been listening to on audiobook a book that I read long ago by David Gilmour called The Pursuit of Italy. And I'm just about at the Risorgimento period and the idea of kind of what the definition of Italy meant to its places and peoples. And he mentions at the outbreak of the first wars of independence in northern Italy, a lot of foreign observers were shocked at how what they saw as a superior culture in Italy could have been under separate governance and foreign domination from Austria for so long. And he's talked about it throughout the book, this idea that from the fall of Rome until reunification, even though Italy's political and governmental situation was fractured and ever-changing, the concept from the outside world was always that Italy was a place of superior culture. It was the more refined, the more advanced, the more forward-thinking in the world. And I think for an American population in the early parts of this republic, that was always the idea of Italy until mass migration really hits and starts to pick up after unification between the 1870s, 90s, and into the 1920s, when Italy's poor and struggling are coming here in some of the largest numbers ever to the United States, are, you know, 4.5 million of them. Can you talk about what the early immigration experience, you know, the big wave of immigration, that classical era that we talk about in the 1890s, what was it like for those people that came in the big boom coming into Philadelphia? How were they received and what did they sort of set up?
Yeah, it's, I witnessed a few of these waves. I mean, what they had to endure, what they had to pass in few places. But one of the most emotional for me and my kids and my wife, I was in Monongah, West Virginia, at the border with Pennsylvania. And in Monongah, we had one of the biggest mining tragedy in the world, definitely maybe the second one for the Italians in the world. The other is Marcinelle, imagine. Why I'm talking about Monongah, I cried, when we all cried, still a little emotional when you hear about the story of people exploited and kids that were killed during the mining tragedy, because even toddlers that they were not officially, but they were working in the mine.
Wow.
So I think we have to take a big respect for the mass migration, because these people, I mean, that they changed continent, that they changed everything, language, way of living. At the beginning, I mean, there were a lot of people that actually did not think to settle. So they were going, and during this terrible trip across the ocean, then they were coming back, and then eventually they decided to settle. So with great respect, I'm talking about this mass migration. And it's the more evident because of the numbers, but as the first settlers, I mean, and as the researchers that are, or the doctors, scientists that are coming now, they were the same, that they brought a desire of creating a better place to bring the best of their culture. And culture is not only Botticelli, it's not only Renaissance painting. Culture is also built a nice, properly made house for your family and for others, or a beautiful church. That's also culture. Food, healthy meal with respect of the tradition is also culture. So the mass migration that they endure a very difficult situation, but some of them, most of them, were able to assimilate and have success in the US. Some of them, terrific success, some others not. But as a group, I think that they eventually had a success. But it was not always, I mean, like we are seeing now. I mean, the respect and the success had to be earned. I met a great friend of mine in Philadelphia. He's an engineer. He created a 1,000 engineers company. He was the head of the U.S. Engineering Association, and his parents were working in the mining near Scranton. So, I mean, success in America, but also, I mean, the success was created with a lot of work and a lot of difficulties. And why, if you think, now some people see it as a controversial figure, and I think it's not, Christopher Columbus. Christopher Columbus, why was it recognized as a federal holiday? Because out of respect of the some tragedies that occurred to Italian Americans. So Columbus was celebrated as a way to put Italian American in the fabric of a founding element of the US. So of course, Italian American could have not been assimilated with pilgrims or the founding fathers, but to these mythological figures of a discoverer of the two worlds. So that's why Columbus. And actually, Columbus, that's another amazing story that I discovered thanks to this book. Columbus in the US is called Columbus and not Colón as the Spanish. There was a Congress in Philadelphia, and they kind of debated in a very spirited way. Not sure they fight, but the Italian-American community and the Spanish-American community and the Italians prevailed. And it's an interesting story by Steve Korn, a professor of Miami University in Ohio. And it's extremely interesting what you wrote.
You know, you bring up the figure of Columbus, and, you know, obviously we've done a lot of episodes on the current controversy and debates, and I think many of our listeners have already listened to the work we've tried to do from an objective perspective, and if not, if you're a new listener, we certainly invite you back into our episode archive to hear what we've done. But it is in only the past few days, as of this recording, that it was decided that the Columbus statue in the city of Philadelphia has to stay because of its relationship to the Italian-American community. Went to court, went to appeals. The mayor had it under a red, white, and green box. And as for those who are supportive of the statue, it was a great victory for them to be able to take down the box, as they've been saying. It's been all over Italian-American social media in the past few days. But it brings to bear, for me, a question more pertinent to the episode, which is that case rested on the idea that there was a community that was represented within the city of Philadelphia, within the borders of the city, by that statue, that figure, that history. So the question becomes now, all of these decades later, or a century even, as Italian-Americans have integrated, assimilated, moved to different places, what is the state of Italian-American life like in the city of Philadelphia today? What is there from the early immigrant experience that has survived and thrived throughout? And what's new and what's coming into Philadelphia today from Italy?
It's extremely interesting. There are several components of the Italian-American community. And first of all, we are talking about really big numbers because I think 10% of the population in Philadelphia, according to the U.S. Census, is from Italian-American origin. But wow. If you just cross the Delaware River and you go to South Jersey, you have counties where you have 40% of people of Italian origin, and you really feel it. So, you know, the as typical Italian-American, South Philly, a lot of them, then they moved to South Jersey. And so you have that, that component. Then you have the young doctors, heads and meds, consultants, lawyers coming from Italy. You have different components. So it's difficult to see what's going on in the Italian-American community because you have several communities, several layers, and sometimes these layers are not all the time interacting as they could, they should, because it's also in their interest, I think, should have been in their interest to interact a little bit more. And the third component of this dialogue, which I tried to promote while I was there, is with the friends, what I was calling the friends of Italy. So people not ethnically linked with Italy, but loving the different aspects of what is Italian in the US and what's Italian. And so to see how to bring all these components together. As a young, Italian American, as you are, John, considering, I think you're the first, the youngest president of NAIF, you might see that it's not always easy to connect the young generation to the roots. So one way, it's one of my thoughts that was put in the book, is that also linking to contemporary Italy, linking to that culture, it's a way to put together young generation, old generation, the heritage of the mass migration, the ideas that came to the first settlers with the founding fathers, bringing together again Rocky and Botticelli and everything, and also bringing contemporary Italy. And I think if we do that, it's what I try to do with our events, but also try to put in writing with that book. If we do that, we discover a richer Italian-American experience in Philadelphia, at least. And we have a broader sense of community and different things that we can learn from the different components. And also maybe we are able to see that the important things, important stuff, it's always the same for the different aspects of our community, and the community is really one.
That's a whole other episode.
Yeah.
The new Italian immigration.
Yes. You're so right.
Because I think it is so deep, because I'll give my opinion on it. It's a class. It's number one. The number one problem is a class issue. Because before, the poorest people from the South immigrated to the United States. And now you have the hyper-educated kids from many of them, the well-to-do from Italy, especially the North. And they don't even like each other in Italy. So why were they going to? So I think that's why you have so many of them come here, and that this conflict of, you know, these are not real Italians, or these are Southern people, and they can only speak a dialect. They can't speak Italian. And they left in the 1950s, and they think Italy's in the 1950s. But I think it's a much deeper, a much more fun episode. They brought so much over from Italy. One thing also was a sense of classism. And I love this because, to me, it's so much Italy has not died. Italy is still so very much alive. The good, the bad, the ugly, the wonderful. And it still winds up on our shores.
I think we have to overcome it. So the idea, we have so much in common, much more than anything else. And if we have situation where it doesn't appear like that, because we don't know enough what all that stuff, all the history, all the culture, all the tradition that link us. So I think that's why it's important to tell the stories. And all the different sections are linked. For instance, there was a poor boy that came to Philadelphia. He worked in hotels, did all the work. And at the end, I mean, he was manager, kind of manager, a little bit less than one of the top hotels of Philadelphia. He never went to college, of course, never went to high school. But he understood how important culture is. And he founded the first chair of Italian studies at the University of Pennsylvania. And that guy, the man, the hero, is Mariano De Vito. And when he died, nobody knew that he left, I think, $2 million in the 70s to University of Pennsylvania. Because he understood how important it was for Italian American to be in that place where now, I mean, kids from Italy are going to study, and actually where I studied with a scholarship when I was younger. So that was important. And University of Pennsylvania, for instance, that's another story in the book at the beginning. They accepted the donation, but they did not establish the chair and the center. And there was a revolt in the Italian American community. Again, I mean, South Philadelphia driven working class people, that they wanted the chair. They wanted the will of Mariano De Vito to be respected. And they were able eventually to fund, to have funded this Italian-American chair and center. And so, yes, there are disconnections, but in the history, also in our time, we see that these two dimensions, they are linked.
They're totally linked. I agree with you. I just think it's just like Italy. Because if you take America from an anthropological Italian-American communities, you go into someone's house, and I say this in many episodes, and you're overwhelmed by food, right? You have a table that's full of food. Why? Because we're farmers. Our brains are made just like farmers. So I don't have money, but I have all the casa cavallo you're ever going to want to eat, right? So I smother you. I bury you under sausage and olives and casa cavallo. They're the immigrants that we got here. So the Italian-American culture is not a mirror of Italian culture. It's a mirror of a Southern Italian agricultural culture of the 19th century. So that's what I feel that we are. That's the basis of how we evolved. That's the place that we evolved from. where the new, and I think it's kind of fun. I don't see it as a negative.
No, but it's just a part. I mean, it's a mosaic.
Yeah, it's a mosaic. Yes.
So yes, what you're saying, it's true. But the same people, I mean, that love Caciocavallo from South Philadelphia, are the one that fought to have the Center of Italian Study at UPenn. So,
oh yes, yeah, I don't see it as a conflict though.
Exactly.
But there's some people from Italy who do, and I kind of find there's an entertainment factor. John, save me on this one. Do you see where I'm going with this?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things that I've experienced. I think first of all, you know, from my time at NIEF and projects all over the country to what we do here, I've always been very aware that we need to put effort in the Italian American community to better understanding our history. Experiences like you talk about with the founding of the Italian American Studies chair and this revolt of the population who, you know, they didn't make that gift. It was made by an individual, but it said something about them and that they wanted the right thing done. I think that's a fantastic story. I'm fascinated to learn more. So there's a part that is the responsibility of the Italian American community, but there's also a big part that's the responsibility of Italy, not just the population and the media and the institutions, but I think an awareness of the relationship was not always one way, right? I think when people think of Italian immigration, or I should say Italian emigration to all these parts of the diaspora, I think they think here went our poor and our farmers and our are undereducated, and they went and they made their life better. But that's not the whole story. I think modern Italy has to do a better job. And I will say, even having you on here as somebody from the diplomatic corps, it really does start at the institutional level, right? Teaching modern Italians that the diaspora has given so much back to Italy, starting with financial contributions being sent back by all of these people, many of whom were sending remittances to their family in Italy that were a significant part of the Italian economy in those times. I don't think people even understand how significant. And then into the post-war period and the Marshall Plan and how much Italian Americans advocated for Italy to get the best treatment, the fights that were there in the Italian American community for Italy to be represented, even though it had been an enemy combatant for a portion of the conflict. You know, a lot of this is the legacy of Italian America going back and contributing to Italy. And I don't think that that's understood or even, frankly, unveiled in modern Italy, and then therefore it can't be appreciated. So I think that it goes both ways. We have to understand this is a diaspora, and like the ambassador says, a mosaic of different experiences all over the world. And not just that we should look at each other in that kind of open and empathetic way because it is good for our, you know, Italianità, our sense of Italianness. It's good business. It's good networking. It makes sense. In a global world, other diasporic communities thrive having these communities abroad.
But that's the beauty of Italy. Where are you from in Italy, if I may ask?
I'm from Pavia, near Milano.
Oh, wow. So there was many different. So that had to be really fascinating because you came from even a different Italy.
No, it's a mosaic. But I was agreeing with John while he was saying that we need a better understanding, also because it makes sense. Because I think that Italy and Philadelphia are perfect together. That was one of my slogans. And from all these similarities, history, friendship and love, I mean, opportunities might and should rise. And we can be living bridges between history and future and between the two continents. So there is an interest. So that's why it's important. Because the book, it's not only history that you witness what the different components of the Italian-American community and the Friends of Italy and Italy we did while I was in Philadelphia, thanks to the Italian Embassy in Washington that helped us and following the direction to create a plan to bring together all these dimensions of the Italian, Italianicity in the city. So the book is part of a dialogue because of what John was saying. I mean, we need a dialogue between these two components because we need to understand what happened in order to understand which the big opportunities that we have in front of us if we really grasp what happened and what is linking us. I'm passionate about that.
Well, I always found in my time getting to collaborate with you or around you that your passion was partnered with an incredible respect for our community here in Italian America and our legacy, and I always appreciated that. So first of all, I want to say a great grazie to you for not just the book, which is amazing, and I really hope everybody goes out and gets a copy because it's unlike a lot of the other books out there, and I have the DC version here in my library and the Philadelphia version in my moving boxes.
John, how come you didn't get me a copy? You always get me copies.
I was given the books actually by, I forget who gave it to me now. Don't embarrass me on the, I will get you a copy.
I'll go
how
out and
that?
Buy it. That's all right. But I'm usually on top of these things. Yeah, I have a copy.
You are good at that.
You say you got a copy and I'm like, I don't got a copy.
I'll make sure next time I'm ordering two. Sorry.
You should order two. I'll give you the money. Don't worry.
I know you will. I know you're good for it.
I'm good for the money.
I think I'm still
Andre,
indebted. If you take
terrible.
Our ledger, I think I'm indebted to you. You always pay for stuff. But needless to say, for the book, but also for the effort and energy you brought in your diplomatic positions here and the respect and affection you've shown, because it's not always the case that we get that from the diplomatic corps. So it's meant a lot to, I know, many of my colleagues in the City of Brotherly Love and to me getting to be around. And I hope to the audience gets to see it here when they hear this.
And Andrea, we're going to come with you as your assistants when you do the other books.
Yeah, I'm in.
Keep them in the Caribbean. I don't want to go to the Italians. Don't go to like the Italians of Iceland. I'm going to plan on that one. Mexico, that's warm. It's got to be 3 or 4 in Aruba.
Well, I have to say it's a great coincidence that as we're recording this, unfortunately, I have to step away because I am on my way to Philadelphia tonight to see some of my former colleagues and a mutual friend of ours, the one and only Joe Del Rosso, the chair.
Oh, say hi to him.
Yeah, I sure will. I think the last time I might have seen you was at an event with him. I don't know.
I think so.
What do you think loves Philly more, Joe Del Rosso or Gabe May? He rest in peace.
That's a great question. Those are two very proud Philadelphians.
Proud Philadelphians.
Yes, very proud Philadelphians. And yeah.
They are both in the book.
Oh, there you go. That's all that counts then. Yeah. If I had to pick two people from Philly, and Amato Berardi too, by the way, who served as our representative in the Italian Chamber of Deputies for many, many years and is a great friend. And
well, if Joe Del Rosso's in the book, he'll be signing them instead of you, Andrea. He'll be handing them out to people with his name. He'll have it in the Union League.
That might be
like,
where I got it.
Like the gospel in the Vatican. You'll have candles burning in front of it.
We have a chapter. We have a chapter about Italy in the Union League. And it's interesting.
You made him a happy man.
Yeah.
I was member and I'm an honorary member of the Union League. I love the Union League. And we did a lot of events in the Union League, putting the Italian flags. And there was a UPenn, University of Pennsylvania professor that called me crying. And because of this Italian flag flying in front of the Union League, because I said, you know, Andrea, when I used to go to Pearl Street with my father, he told me, well, that's the place of the big guys. You will never be able to enter that place. And so, of course, now it's that person's top professor and he can be member. The idea for that person to see the Italian flag in front of the Union League was wow.
Yeah.
Something happened. And actually, it's an interesting chapter, about the one about the Union League.
And I'll be at the Union League tonight. And so that's a great coincidence that we're doing this today. And you're absolutely right. Think about, if you want to really understand the legacy of what has come in this country, this is a great resource for it, for a phenomenal city. But the idea that those places that once wouldn't even consider an Italian for membership now have so been taken by our hard work, our dedication, our accomplishments, and the legacy of Italy that we represent.
They want to be us now.
They might. That's right.
Their great grandfathers would let us in the back door.
Yep.
And their kids now are studying semesters in Siena.
That's it. There you go.
So who got the last laugh?
That's absolutely right. Yes.
Right? Italy conquers countries with bowls of pasta and bottles of wine. We don't need
paintings and music and art. You're right.
Yeah, we have art, music, and art. We're a post-military world. I mean, we have uniforms on our military because they look nice.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, who looks better than a carabinieri in a parade? But we don't need weapons. Make fusilli, not war.
That's absolutely right. Yeah.
Go out, especially you Philly people, go out, buy the book, read the book, and give the book to your friends and family.
Yeah. Yeah.
For birthdays,
and your
Mother's
institutions,
Day, Father's
your
Day,
libraries.
Valentine's Day.
If yeah,
you're
your
in
local
love with
libraries,
a girl
your...
from Philly or a guy from Philly, give him the book.
Yes, absolutely right. It's right. A great gift. Yeah.
Great gift. It's you put a big yeah. heart on the inside. I love you. Read, enjoy the book.
Brotherly love. City of love. That's right. Well, from all of us at the Italian American Podcast, we hope you've enjoyed this wonderful visit with the great representative of the Republic of Italy and a great friend. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Hold on. Hold on. John, are you out
of control?
Oh,
you didn't get the warning. I didn't give you your
John,
warning.
John, I mean, are you serious? Are you reasoning here? I know you want to go to... Hold on.
Really taking to that.
See that you're born an Italian. If you want your life to be great. See that you're born an Italiano and your life will be great. See that you're born an Italiano and